PM. I am here with my engineer and compadre Egberto Willis, who has his own show Monday nights at 9, Politics Done Right. We just have different politics. Well, we have similar politics. We just have nuances of difference. Yeah. Okay. We have discussions before we go on the air. Sometimes I wish that the discussions we had on the air were half as interesting as the discussions we had before the show. But, you know, it's like the energy runs out. The balloon deflates when you have this, you talk about this stuff beforehand. Anyway, we had an interesting show last week. You know, sometimes these things just spin off in unexpected directions. I started off talking about a photo I'd like to get of my cousin from 1984 at an old-timers' day in Fenway Park. And we ended up talking about child discipline, child abuse, where the line is, whether it's cultural, why different parents do things in different ways with their kids, why kids. It was really, really interesting. If somebody wants to pick up that thread again this week, we have some reasons to do so. Let me first start off with several things that I wanted to touch on. Elections. I'm going to be nudging you guys about this for the next several weeks, okay? Elections are coming up November 4th. Early voting starts in just about 4 weeks. It's really unbelievable how time flies. Early voting runs from October in Harris County in Texas. Early voting runs from October 20th to October 31st. You can get voting information for Harris County at harrisvotes.com. You can get voting information for other counties anywhere in the state of Texas at votetexas.gov. So far, it's looking like photo ID of some acceptable sort will be required for voting. However, I think that there's a court case which is going to be coming up fairly quickly, and that rule may or may not change. But for the time being, assume that you're going to need to have, for voting purposes, what is considered a valid voter ID. We have a special offer tonight. I want to give you guys a heads up so that we have a little time for you to call in while I'm going over some of this other business. I got an email from Robin Lewis of KPFT late this afternoon that KPFT came into two pairs of tickets for tomorrow night, Thursday night, the 25th, at the Wortham Center at 7 p.m. The tickets are for Woodward and Bernstein. It starts at 7 p.m. There is no charge. You're not required to make a donation for these tickets. However, if you want them, if you are pretty certain that you have the time and inclination to use them, we'd hate them to go to waste. I would request that you make a contribution to KPFT if you get these tickets. Now, here's the deal. Two pairs of tickets. So two callers each will get a pair of tickets. I cannot tell you where the tickets are. I cannot tell you whether they sit next to each other. I cannot tell you what section they are in. I can tell you that having checked the website, brilliantlectures.org, that the cheapest tickets I saw that are still available were $160 a pair. So this is a potentially valuable gimme. The way we're going to do this is the first two callers that go on the air that can use these tickets tomorrow night, please don't just waste them. The first two callers that go on the air will be entitled to these tickets, and Egberto, when he takes your information, will explain to you how to get them and give you a contact number and person so that you can ask any questions you may want to ask about getting them or where they are or whatever. And that's how we'll do it. So the phone number, belatedly, is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I'm going to give it to you again. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, tomorrow night at the Wortham Center, two pairs of tickets to the first two callers that go on the air that have time tomorrow night to go. Okay, so we'll come back to that. We'll see how that works out. I got to go to the 100-Year Starship Symposium last weekend. I have to tell you, I had a lot of fun. I don't know how many people actually were there. I think it was probably a couple of hundred. Got to meet some really cool people. Mae Jemison, of course, doctor, former astronaut. Nichelle Nichols was there. I have a cool story about Nichelle Nichols. Most of you probably are aware she played Uhura in the original Star Trek. And on Saturday night, we were in a food line. She's gotten a little frail. She's a little older. I mean, you have to remember that that show now was on almost 50 years ago. And I let her cut into the food line and was rewarded with a kiss on the cheek. So it's like a high point of my science fiction life. I got a kiss on the cheek from Nichelle Nichols, a.k.a. Lieutenant Uhura. That was pretty cool. You can get information on the 100-Year Starship Symposium, 100100yss.org. Really very interesting stuff. It's more fun than a science fiction convention because you get the same kind of really smart, forward-looking people, except the stuff we're talking about isn't fiction. It's stuff that people are really doing and really working on. I know we had at least two or three astronauts there. We had a TED fellow and astrophysicist, Hakeem Alusei. The Saturday Expo Inspire thing for adults and kids, I have to tell you, there was a really big turnout for that. That was great, talking about the space elevator system, improved forms of space propulsion. I need to talk about space exploration a little bit more, because I think the only time we hear about it is when something bad happens, you know, like a shuttle crashes or a rocket blows up or a satellite doesn't reach orbit. The old saying, no news is good news, and the reverse is also true. Good news is no news. So, for example, we actually learned the other day that India has gotten a satellite in orbit around Mars. They are not only the first Asian nation to get a satellite to Mars, they are the first country to get to Mars on the first try, which is kind of cool. So anyway, I don't want to dwell too much on that, but 100yss.org, it's a really cool organization. You should look into it if you have interests in those sorts of things. Last week's show, as I was saying earlier, we kind of got into this whole Adrian Peterson thing about his using a switch on his four-year-old son, and where is the boundary between discipline and assault, between discipline and abuse. And, of course, there's the Ray Rice thing. There's the general question of corporal punishment. And we've also now learned that there is a woman on the United States national soccer team, Hope Solo, and she is also being charged with abuse and assault for assaulting her half-sister and her 17-year-old nephew. So, you know, abuse, assault, it ain't just for men. It's worth discussing. Okay, we have our first caller and ticket winner, Monica.
SS.org. It's a really cool organization.
And you need to turn down the radio. Hi.
show.
Monica?
As I was saying earlier, we kind of got into this.
Hello, you have to turn down your radio.
Oh, my goodness. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So you got the tickets?
Yes, I did.
Egberto explained to you how to claim them and to call Robin in the afternoon or sometime tomorrow so that you can just confirm everything with her?
Yes, they explained to me.
Excellent. So, have you got something you'd like to talk about tonight? We have one more pair of tickets, by the way, just so people know. I'm sorry, Egberto's asking a question. I can't read his lips.
I think you have one pair, correct? Or is it
two pairs?
Yes,
two pairs.
I have one.
So she got the first pair.
Yeah, what Egberto is asking me, because he wasn't sure, he didn't know if I had two tickets or two pairs. I have two pairs. So, Monica, you get the first pair. There is still one pair out there for somebody who is available tomorrow night to see Woodward and Bernstein. So tell me, have you got anything you'd like to talk about tonight?
I'm kind of actually nervous to be on the radio, so I...
It doesn't help to have the radio on a time delay, I have to tell you. You want to turn that down, and then we can chat about whatever
okay.
you like. Okay, we're good?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Excellent. So anything catch your eye in the news today? Any of the topics that we've got space news, we've got NFL news, we've got soccer news, we've got Syria and Iraq news, we've got bombing and terrorism news. There's really a whole plethora of things to talk about. Or you can talk about your cat if your cat did something cool today. I'm okay with cat talk.
I guess right now there are a few things that are going on in the news that kind of scare me. Is just everything with the things that are going on with in Syria and all the criticism that President Obama is having because of his lack of war on terror and all those things.
It's a really complicated question. I said around the time that we had this first go round with Syria with their chemical weapons, I don't remember what show I was doing. I don't remember if it was on my HD3 show or if I was doing a morning stand-in for Dwayne Bradley. But I had said at the time that there were a lot of possible outcomes in Syria. None of them were good. To the extent that you can make such a broad prediction and claim some credit, I suppose I was right. A lot of possible outcomes. None of them are good. Do you think that Obama is taking an appropriate course of action? Would you prefer he had taken a different course? Do you think the Republicans are right that we should have just armed the rebels in the first place? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that he's doing the right thing. Although I know that there's a lot of opposition to what he's been doing. But I also know that I kind of see him as someone who's doing something different than has been done before. So I agree with what he's doing.
There are some people that feel that the threat posed to the United States and presumably our allies in Europe is overblown. Are you one of those, or you don't know?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a tough call. Would you like me to let you go, Monica? You sound like you're kind of...
I am too nervous to be on the radio. Way too nervous.
Well, you've had your first time. It only gets easier after this.
It's your first time, yes.
It's your first time. Well, that's great. I appreciate your calling. It is not required, but I would hope that if you have a good time tomorrow night that you will contribute something to KPFT because they've got a fundraiser coming up, and it's always nice to have a little something in the basket.
Okay.
I thank you so much for calling. I hope you have a great time with the tickets. Do me a favor. Give me a call next week and let me know how you did.
Okay.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay. We have open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We still have a pair of tickets. It's kind of a little like a grab bag thing. We don't know where the tickets are. I will tell you that the only seats that are available on the website are good seats. Now, they may have already blocked out these seats as being like somewhere up in the rear balcony, and that may be why there's nothing there. But I will tell you that if they're just going to be looking to fill unpaid-for seats, the only empty seats that show on the chart are good seats. So we'll see. It's a little bit of a crapshoot. It's going to be really interesting. 713-526-5738. If you have free time tomorrow night to go to the Wortham Theater, 7 to, I think, 10 p.m., to listen to Woodward and Bernstein talk about the issues of our time and probably Watergate, because that never entirely goes away, give us a call. Give Egberto your information, and then go on the air, and we'll see if we can have a conversation about something. 713-526-5738. Syria and Iraq. You know, one of the interesting things is that as soon you had all these hawks, most of them Republicans, but not all. Many of them Democrats, but certainly not all. This was kind of a bipartisan war fever. I have mixed feelings about it. I think most people have mixed feelings about it. Is it necessary? Is it not necessary? How necessary is it? How important is it that we have Sunni Arab allies? Do we actually have Sunni Arab allies? Are they helping us with one hand and helping ISIS? We don't know. Very complicated part of the world. If oil wasn't there, and if weapons hadn't become so powerful and easily accessible, I don't think we would have anything to do over there. But that's the reality of modern times. One of the things that I find interesting is the number of Republicans now, and I believe John McCain is among them, and perhaps Lindsey Graham, the number of Republicans who are saying, you see, we told you so, President Obama, you should have armed the Syrian Free Army when you had the chance, and then we wouldn't have to go into this at all. You made a mistake, and now you're trying to cover it up, and this is totally your war. Well, you know, this is called Monday morning quarterbacking. But here's, to me, an interesting thing. I read science fiction. That is my recreational reading, my bedtime reading. I don't read self-improvement books. I don't read political treatises. I don't read history. When I'm going to bed, I want something where I can completely check out and just do something fun. And one of the popular genres and one of my favorite genres in science fiction is a well-done alternative history story. And there are some. Some of them are really, really interesting. But here's the thing about alternative history that you learn, if you haven't already figured it out, by reading books. And that is that just because the path you choose didn't work out well, that doesn't mean that given the opportunity to go back and change your course of action, that your alternative course of action will turn out any better. So just because not arming the rebels didn't save us from apparently having, and I say apparently having, to go back to war in Iraq and Syria, that doesn't mean that the Republicans' suggested course of action would have worked out any better, or would have worked out as badly, or might not have worked out worse. So Monday morning quarterbacking. It's a risky proposition no matter how you look at it. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. Got a pair of tickets to give away and still looking to have some chit-chat. You know, Donald Rumsfeld, I mean, he's a war criminal, but he came up with one of the great quotes. And I'm going to paraphrase, but it's pretty close. He talked about the situation going into Iraq in 2003. And he came up with this famous phrase, the known knowns, the known unknowns, and the unknown unknowns. And a lot of fun was made of that. It sounds so weird. And yet when you think about it, I have to tell you, it's the only thing he ever said that I ever quote. And what we should have done in Syria and Iraq earlier, if anything, is an unknown unknown. We can't know what we don't know. So if we had given weapons to the Syrian rebels, it might have turned out like Russian-occupied Afghanistan, where we created Osama bin Laden, and we created what became the Taliban, and we armed them, and we trained them, and we funded them, and they came back to bite us. Let me tell you one of the funny ironies of history. Before the Second World War, Japan is a very resource-poor nation. They import almost everything. And before the war, one of the biggest exports that the United States had to Japan, aside from oil, which we were exporting to Japan, was scrap iron. And if you watch some of the old war movies, one of the complaints that apparently must have been very common at the time, because it's usually put in the mouth of some character, is, and we sent that scrap metal to Japan, and now it comes back to us as bullets, or it comes back to us as airplanes, or it comes back to us as artillery shells. Now, what we're actually doing is selling them sophisticated weaponry that's coming back at us. It's just funny how history repeats itself, isn't it? Come on, guys. Open line, 713-526-5738. Don't make me pick. Bernie Sanders has announced that he is considering a run for president. Bernie Sanders is serving his second term in the U.S. Senate. He is an independent. He is neither a Republican nor a Democrat, although he caucuses with the Democrats, but that's strictly his choice. He has referred to himself as being a socialist. So he makes no apologies. He is a liberal, but he is a liberal who also considers himself a socialist. I personally subscribe to Lawrence O'Donnell's comment, which I think he lifted from someplace else. We are all socialists now. There's so much socialism in this country. Aside from the obvious ones like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and unemployment insurance, the military is socialist. It's a state-sponsored organization. Police are socialism. Public roads are socialism. Fire departments in most of the country, there are exceptions that are interesting, is socialism. So Bernie Sanders, considering a run for the president, he has said, after being cornered, he has said in so many words that he feels he would be a better president than Hillary. There are a lot of interesting questions. First of all, I like Bernie Sanders. I think he's courageous. He's outspoken. He tends to be slightly disheveled, which makes him my kind of guy. But there are a lot of variations on how this thing could play out if he actually decides that he wants to take a shot at running for president. His first decision is whether he would want to run as an independent or as a Democrat. If he wants the Democratic nomination, he will have to become a registered Democrat. This is something that I think he would not want, but we'll see. If he wants to run as an independent, and if he persists throughout the entire process, or survives for that matter throughout the entire process, you know, financially and politically, we could end up with a Republican president in 2017. It's entirely possible. So if you have Bernie running and you have Hillary running, and Egberto, there was a third guy we were talking about earlier. Who was the third one we thought might be running?
Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is younger than both Bernie and Hillary, so she can wait. And I think if it came down, of course, there's the strike the iron while it's hot thing, which is how Obama got to be elected. But, I mean, as far as age goes, she can wait. This is turning out to be really interesting, and interesting isn't always good. But we'll see. It might be good. Egberto, I think, would be excited to have someone run against Hillary and at least maybe move her to the left some. I know that Hillary comes across to a lot of Democrats as being sort of conservative in things like finance and military. I cannot read lips. I'm sorry, Egberto.
Neocon light.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people that feel that way. I do think she is a social moderate liberal. She was the one who really pushed for health care during the Clinton administration. So she's, a lot of people feel, I mean, Rachel Maddow has said that Bill Clinton was the best moderate Republican president we've ever had. And there are a lot of people that feel that way. Okay, I've got Alan waiting on the line, and I don't want to be rude. Alan, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight? Did you get the tickets?
Oh, yes. I am old enough to appreciate where they're coming from. I remember Watergate quite well.
Yes.
Was at the 100-year Starship Symposium.
Yes, I remember seeing you there.
So, anyway, what shall we talk about?
Well, you're the caller, and it's open forum. However, we have a lot of topics. We can talk about the presidential race starting in 20. Well, I mean, technically, it started 2 years ago, which is pathetic. But you can talk about Hillary. You can talk about Bernie. You can talk about Elizabeth. We can talk about Iraq and Syria. We can talk about whether to bomb or not to bomb. We can talk about whether there's a benefit to having Arab allies or not, whether the Arab allies really are allies or whether they're just superficial allies while they're also funding and doing their own political manipulations with various fundamentalist and jihadist groups. There
well,
is an
I'll
endless
touch on a
plethora.
Few topics and share my thoughts on those.
Okay.
Regarding the politics of the day and so forth, I'm in favor of a democracy amendment to make the United States a democracy. And,
now, a lot of people won't understand.
Hold on, Ellen.
Sure. A lot of people won't understand what you're talking about. So,
I'm
why
about
don't you explain the difference between the technical difference between a democracy and a republic?
Yes. Well, republic is representative government, and a true democracy is where the people would approve whatever legislation was being decided.
Essentially, everything becomes a vote.
Yes, and the what I would envision is our people in Congress being employees of the people, so to speak. They can write legislation, but they themselves would not vote on it, and that would take away the incentives for all the bribery from, you know, corporations and super PACs and whatever else, you know, for the campaigns and so forth to get these certain bills passed and whatever. They could write the legislation, but the people would vote on it all year long. So you have two different kinds of voting. You have voting to elect people to Congress or whatever at the usual time, November, whatever. But throughout the year, you would have people voting, and even if it was only one-half of 1% of the people, that would still be more eyes looking at the legislation than currently do in Congress, because they're so overwhelmed with a lot of stuff to pass all the time, and people put riders on, and stuff is crammed into a bill that has nothing to do with the original bill. It gets passed anyway, you know. So anyway, that's one topic.
Well, hold on now. Before you move on, let me respond, because there are some interesting things to talk about here.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm sure you're a well-informed guy, so I'm sure that you know what the typical voter turnouts are for presidential elections, off-year congressional elections, and don't even get me started on primaries and municipal and bond elections. You know what the kinds of turnouts we get are, right?
Sure.
Give us a brief summation so I know we're on the same page.
Well, presidential, you're doing good if you get majority of the voters to vote.
Right.
On the
50 to 60% is a good turnout.
But some of these in-between years and lesser issues, sometimes the turnout is only 5 or 10% for primaries and so forth.
Yeah, 15% for an off-year election can be pretty good. Primaries, 5 or 10%. I remember once we had a local election. I don't remember exactly what it was, but the turnout was light, and it was so light that at one polling place in Montgomery County, the voter turnout was exactly one.
Amazing.
One person in the entire precinct voted.
And that reminds me, if we had some form of instant runoff voting or approval voting, that would save the taxpayers so much money, because they wouldn't have to pay for a runoff election. And moreover, it's fairer for the challenging candidates, because normally if you have a primary or a runoff, the incumbent will have more money than the challenger, and the challenger may spend all their money just trying to get into the runoff, and then they don't have anything left for the runoff itself. So that's just one thought, instant runoff voting.
I think going back, I think that that's something that we need to explore. I would also like to see that nobody can win an election without at least 50% plus one.
Yes,
I think when you have someone win a Senate
runoff
seat or a governor's seat or a presidential position, anything really, I don't think anybody should be able to win with a plurality.
I agree. And also we should do away with straight ticket voting, because that's a lazy way to vote, and you are minimizing or whatever the difference is individually of the candidates. And there may be a better qualified candidate in a party that you don't like, but you know that that's a fair-minded candidate, and maybe they're the best candidate in that race.
But here's the thing about straight ticket voting. You can vote, and I'm going to just use this as a hypothetical. You can vote a straight Democratic ticket and then go down ballot and punch for a Republican or a Green or a Libertarian, and that will count. So
yeah,
straight
how
ticket.
How many people bother to do so?
Well, how many people bother to vote?
Yeah.
You know, when you get down to it.
Yeah.
I think if I had an objection to being a true democracy versus a representative republic, I think this system is better to the extent that either system has its problems, primarily because if you only have five perceived, I mean, people get ballot fatigue just voting twice a year. Could you imagine if they had to vote on every piece of legislation that came out of the Senate and the House and the state legislature and the state Senate and the city council and the county judges? It would be impossible.
Well, I mean, they vote on what they're interested in. And it would be on the candidates and the representatives who are writing the bills to make it interesting.
I don't have enough faith in
bribing the representatives to write it their way would have to take their argument to the people, and that would be a boon for the media because they get all this extra advertising, and instead. The political advertising, you know, is a big ticket for them right now. But I would say we should have a common pool of money for all the candidates to be shared equally.
Well, that gets into a different topic. But
yeah.
let me do this first because I already missed a station ID.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm here with Egberto Willis as well. I've got Alon on the line. Public financing of elections. I mean, the thing about solutions, they're never simple, and there's no black or white. There's always shades of gray. So we talked about a republic versus a true Athenian-style democracy. That has a lot of issues on both sides. Nothing is perfect. You talk about public election financing. By the way, we have open lines, 713-526-5738. You talk about public financing, and then, of course, you get into who qualifies for public financing. Can a LaRouche Democrat just go in and say, I want to run for city council, and I want to be financed? What are the criteria? Where are the cutoffs?
Well, if they're a legitimate candidate that would otherwise...
Who is a legitimate candidate?
What's
the definition?
Qualify.
Alon, what is the definition of a legitimate candidate? Your legitimate candidate might be Mike Cook.
And pay your fee or whatever, you know. I mean, not everybody can run for president. They have to become an official candidate, even if they're an independent, to be on the ballot. So they have to pay the fee to the state or whatever and become a registered candidate. So that wouldn't change. But the listeners can learn more about what I'm talking about if they go to...
Keep this address simple.
DemocracyUSA.net.
Say it again.
DemocracyUSA.net, if I correctly remember.
Okay.
That's one of the amendments proposed by Harry Braun as a democracy amendment. And we can do it under the 14th, Article 5 of the 14th Amendment. We don't have to go through Congress to get a constitutional amendment. People can do it through their states.
That's true.
So it's only been done once before.
It's very, very hard.
But I like to say that Congress is not going to bite the hand that feeds it.
Well, here's the thing. When you do that kind of an amendment, that technically is not an amendment. That technically is a call for a constitutional convention. So the reason that has only happened once in American history, if it has happened once, which amendment are you saying? I don't know that it's ever happened. What amendment do you think it happened with?
I forget... Personally, I recall reading that has been done once before, but it was on one of the early amendments in the teens, you know, like 17th or
there,
something like that.
I believe that what you're thinking of, and I don't remember the specific amendment either, but I seem to recall that there was a constitutional amendment that there was a big public groundswell for, and it's because the Congress would not pass it to send out to the states. It started getting passed by state legislatures, and I think it came one state short. And because Congress and a great many other people did not want it to come to a constitutional convention, because that puts everything up for grabs. The last time we had one of those, we threw out the Articles of Confederation and came up with a Constitution. So at that point, everything is up for grabs. And at that point, the Congress passed an amendment which then passed the state legislatures. So I don't think it ever actually got to the point of an amendment passing through the states. I think that the threat forced Congress to pass an amendment which then the states approved.
Let me correct myself. The web address that I spoke of is democracyamendmentusa.net. That's all one word, democracyamendmentusa.net.
Okay. Hey, Alberto.
So, anything?
Do you have any?
You have any particular reviews about the 100-year starship?
I thought it was great fun.
I did too, and I really enjoyed meeting scientists and academic people from all over the world.
What I think
and,
is really
it's
cool.
Very
is...
comprehensive, because they have to go into medicine, psychology, and how you grow your food.
We had a steampunk guy there.
Yeah.
We had a steampunk guy. Normally, this is science fiction stuff. But the reason that he was there is because one of the things you have to consider when you're colonizing a new planet, not necessarily in another star system, mind you, could be Mars or the Moon. One of the reasons that when you go to another planet, you have to start from essentially a zero industrial base. So the easiest way to start, you have to make the stuff that makes the stuff that makes the stuff.
Right.
So the easiest way to start is perhaps with something like a 19th century technology base, where you're talking about essentially cast iron and relatively simple machine tools, which then allow you to make other stuff. And of course, there's an aesthetic to steampunk. For those who are not familiar, steampunk is sort of a science fiction genre where essentially you take steam power and the Victorian era, but kind of add more sophistication to it. We do have open lines, 713. This is turning into the Mike and Alon and Egberto show.
On the other hand, you have 3D printing and all these new inventions,
yes,
and you can make stuff out of silicon. So you don't have to start with old technology necessarily. Buckminster Fuller said, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. So I'll let you go with that, and hope some other callers share their thoughts.
We have somebody coming on now.
Okie doke.
Thank you so much, Alon. Take
Thank
care.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and my compatriot Egberto Willis. He has his show Monday nights at 9 p.m., Politics Done Right. They're just different politics from mine a little. We have Jim on the line. Jim, how are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I was kind of hanging back, hoping that somebody else would call in to talk instead of me having to do it.
Thanks for rescuing me.
Well, anyway. So, okay, so let me see if I can get something coherent out
there.
Talking about, what you know, the thing going on over in Syria with ISIS, and also kind of the criticism Obama is getting, you know, as far as having pulled out of Iraq and therefore letting ISIS, you know, take root. I think that for one thing, I mean, it kind of strikes me that if we had stayed in Iraq, you know, I mean, you've probably heard reports of like the Iraqis, you know, they go out to fight, but they have their civilian clothes, you know, underneath their uniforms. So, you know,
it's
when,
like
when
they're
it gets,
reverse.
It gets a little tough, you know. It's
they're
like,
reverse superheroes.
No, I'm a peace activist.
No, I mean, this is really cool. When you think about it, it's like Superman finds a place to take off his clothes and put on his uniform. These guys find a place to take off their uniform and put on their clothes.
Exactly. Well, so again, before I lose my thought here, my thoughts on that were if we hadn't have pulled out, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying Obama was this clever to have foreseen ISIS coming, you know, in the dramatic fashion that they did, but if we hadn't have pulled out, I mean, If the Iraqis, especially, I mean, the not the Sunnis, but the Shiites, if they hadn't had the fear of God or Allah or whatever put in them, do you think that they would have ever, you know, like, made the concessions to at least, you know, at least start moving towards a, you know, a sharing of power with those folks? And do you think that the Iraqi army would have, you know, been, you know, they wouldn't have, they seem to be more inclined now to go, you know, and take the fight to ISIS, at least knowing that they have some air power backup, but knowing also that the Americans are not over the horizon. I don't, you know, it just seems to me that, you know, without the fear of this other group, which is way more whack than any of, you know, any of the people apparently that they know, you know, coming after them and their families, that they, you know, I don't think that they would have really, you know, moved towards a, you know, a self-sustaining, self-governing, you know, self-defending, you know, state like they had. And so I guess, you know, my comment would be the Republicans, they're always going to criticize Obama.
Yeah, you hear about they're criticizing the so-called coffee salute, the latte salute.
Well, I don't know what that is.
Oh, my God. This is apparently Obama was coming off Marine One.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of Marines were at the bottom of the stairs and saluting him, and he had a cup of coffee in his right hand, and he saluted them sort of with the coffee. And apparently now this is going to be an impeachable offense, I'm suspecting.
Well, this, you know, I don't know if the, you know, to me sometimes when I, now, you know, this is the first I've heard of that, but I mean, I'm totally, like, not surprised.
Yeah, check the news on the Obama coffee salute. It's unbelievable. Just do a search.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, I don't know, I subscribe to, like, one of these, you know, email notifications, like Daily Kos.
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever been there. Not Daily,
I do,
KOS.
Yep.
But anyway, it's a left-wing kind of blog thing. And they're just full of all these, like, off-the-wall, you know, but really, they're just distractions. You know, it's like, I don't know if, it, like, each side maybe needs to get outraged about the other to keep, you know, to keep up their outrage or whatnot. But, you know, to me, after a while, it gets to the point where I just wonder if people on the right don't sometimes feel like I do on the left. You know, it's like, you know, yes, every side has their, you know, their kooks. But, you know, after a while, I mean, my outrage meter just gets pegged and it won't work anymore.
I think it's a problem that the Republicans have become more than an opposition party. They have just become an opposition.
Right.
And right. It's no longer a matter of we have a different vision for the country. It's our vision for the country is we are in power, and whatever the other side does, whether we think it might be good or bad, whether the ideas were originally ours or not, we're mm-hmm. going to criticize it, whether we think it's good for the country or not, because we want to be in power. It's right. an any way, any means kind of argument.
Well, I think that particular idea actually is probably going to be put to the test in this election. At least I've heard this thought about it, is that, you know, this, you know, we all know, you know, Mitch McConnell, you know, made the statement or something like right when Obama was first elected,
yeah.
was that basically we're going to oppose everything,
right?
You know, and so the question now coming up to this election is, will the American people see through that as a strike? Because basically what the Republicans are, I think the thinking was that after a while of nothing getting done, of them basically no matter what comes along, they're not going to cooperate. If the American people will at some point just throw up their hands and say, well, let's just put the Republicans in there and see, you know, maybe that'll work, you know. And so there's a lot of talk out there now that this coming election will be kind of a test to see whether, you know, Mitch McConnell's strategy actually, you know, bore fruit.
Well, you know, Lincoln once said you can fool all of the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. We just can't figure out which time this election is going to be.
Well, you can let me go anyhow, but on that very same thought, my aunt, she gave me this like desk calendar, and on every day it had a Bushism on it, and one of them that was to me it was my favorite on there was basically that quote: "You fool some people all the time, some people all the time." But then Bush said, "But there are some people you can fool all the time, and those are the ones you need to concentrate on."
If he didn't say it, he probably ought to.
No, he did say it.
He
giving some speech or some, you know, I think it was a football, you know, or university or something like that.
The most famous quote I can think of, the first one that always comes to mind is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, pause.
Shame on
me. Can't fool me again.
Well, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be, but, you know.
Push. Yeah. Well, listen, just one final thought, maybe some other people can put. One of the frustrating, I mean, because I will take second to none in my kind of disgust with the political right, it pretty much over the board. But one of the problems that I sometimes have with the left comes back to what's going on, with Obama now that, he's trying to get a coalition together to attack ISIS and whatnot. And he's gotten criticism for not funding the supposed good guys.
Yeah, the supposed good guys.
Opposing Syria, Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And it's sort of like, I understand where, people on, or peace activists and whatnot, make the point that the last thing a region needs is more and more weapons, and then you start going over, and the people that we gave weapons to, they did this or that.
I'm sure the NRA would agree that the only way to stop a bad country with weapons is a good country with weapons.
Yeah, I mean, you get to the point where it's like you have to recognize that if one side wants peace more than the other side wants peace, or one side has, is willing to take, has the weapons and the other side just doesn't have the weapons, then whatever side that we happen to favor, whatever their faults, our side is generally, going to be kind of either left out or be decimated. And, and just one final thought, and I'll let you go on that, is imagine what would have happened if the French back, when we were fighting for our independence, had taken the position that, well, we can't support the Americans because they support slavery. Eventually, and it wasn't easy. And I'm not saying that, I've even heard the thought that the American Revolution possibly was a revolt against the British because they were going to abolish slavery. But the truth of the matter is that we would not have won the war against the British without the help of the French.
And, of course, that's really interesting when you talk about countries working against their own national interests.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, the French and the British were either at war or on the verge of war.
Oh, yeah.
And the French considered it in their interest to do whatever they could with a small investment to distract the British in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we were talking about a monarchy form of government helping a Republican form of government take root for the first time in maybe 2,000 years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that ended up being the downfall of the French monarchy.
Wow, yeah. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, so countries don't always do the things that turn out the best for them. But, I mean, the French example in the American Revolution is a good example of trying to do the smart thing for your country and it goes terribly, terribly wrong.
Right. Or, if you had been, they had been too, said, well, we can't stomach the fact that, what America does to, the African Americans. So we're not going to support them. We would still be a British colony. So, maybe they shouldn't have supported us. But it was sort of an example, I think, of the French naked self-interest ended up working in our favor, but perhaps to the detriment of,
French,
a significant portion of our population, at least until for a long time. Although, even today, they're still getting a short shrift.
Well, the serendipity of history, alternative timelines.
Yeah, the fickle finger of fate.
The fickle finger of fate, precisely. Thank you so much for calling, Jim. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, entertaining show. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care. We do have open lines, and we have about 10 more minutes, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I've been watching Egberto do a lot of head shaking and hand gesticulating. You got anything you want to contribute here, Egberto?
I am just taken aback that it was a good thing that the French didn't look at that little issue that we had called slavery and aided us, and that England was possibly going to abolish slavery, but the good guys we're the revolutionaries.
I've actually never heard that the Americans revolted because the British were going to abolish slavery. And
no,
I believe that at the time the French were involved in the American Revolution, they had slavery, especially particularly on an island or an area called
Toussaint Louverture had already taken the island. In fact, when Toussaint Louverture...
What year?
1806. It was...
17-something. I think it was like 1781 thereabouts.
It was the first independent Western black country.
But I think that at the time, I think that that happened just maybe after the American Revolution or near the end of the American Revolution.
I don't quite remember the dates.
So, but the key thing is that if that is approximately the time at the when this was going on, the French themselves had slavery in the Western Hemisphere until the Haitian Rebellion.
I don't have the dates, but what I'm saying is, not to say anything about what the caller, I mean, I understand where the caller is coming from. We're all Americans, and we want what's good for America. But,
and we all want to think the best of the country and get disappointed when it does wrong.
Right, but when you think about it, you know, it is, I just find it ironic how easy it is for folks to dismiss how, you know, slavery. You know, think about that in the way it was so antiseptic. And well, maybe they could have, you know, maybe they shouldn't have helped us. Maybe they should have, you know.
I think it's multi-generational separation.
Yeah.
I think makes everything look better.
Yes, I guess so.
If you look again, old movies, because I watch old movies on TCM. If you watch old movies, they were making movies at a time when Civil War veterans were still alive.
Yeah.
And the South was looked at, if not sympathetically, at least not harshly.
Well, you know, I always, for me, it's always, you know, as somebody coming in from Central America and coming in here and watching how folks deal between the South and the North, as if there is a great difference in the way folks think about race. I think it's kind of ironic because I think for all practical purposes, and somebody's going to slap me, but I think the South gets a bad rap as far as how, you know, as far as a whole lot of things.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that. But first, let me say, when I first moved down here in 1977 from Brooklyn, having grown up in New York, I heard about how terrible the South was. And I'm not saying the South wasn't terrible, but the biggest surprise that I got was when I moved to Houston in 1977. And this is just Houston.
Yeah.
It was more desegregated than Brooklyn was.
I know. You're right.
Now, that's not to say that all of Texas was desegregated and all of Texas was great,
Mike,
but that was an interesting
revelation. That was a great observation. Because, and that's what I'm saying. What happened is our news media is concentrated in the Northeast or the Far West. And, you know, just like how they say the victor is the one who tells history. We have to remember that back in the 70s, there were busing riots in Massachusetts. I don't remember too many busing riots here in the South. I mean, I'm just saying that I think
that's true.
I think they're equally.
They had other forms of resistance here.
Oh, sure. I mean, we had things like the poll taxes and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know how different that is in some parts of New York where there are very few people who look like me in many different townships in New York. So I really
New York
think
State.
In New York State. Yeah, New York State. I really think a lot of times the South gets a bad rap.
On the other hand, though, what we see is there is this persistent undercurrent that is just waiting to rise up and suppress voters.
Yes.
And just waiting to gain power so that they can pass discriminatory laws.
But that's true in Ohio. That's true in Pennsylvania.
It apparently is. So this seems to be an undercurrent that is longstanding. It's almost like, you know, you talk about the body politic, and occasionally I have made the analogy that the body politic is a lot like the body. And you have pathogens that the body has to fight off with an immune system. And I think that there is a political metaphor there as well. You've got political sicknesses that are constantly there in our society, and every society is an undercurrent, and you constantly need to have another part of the body politic observant for that and prepared to fight it and prepared to suppress it. I've got Stacy on the line. Stacy, thank you so much for calling. You're on the air. What's on your mind tonight?
Hi. Well, I mean, I'm an eighth generation Texan on one side of my family and seventh generation on the other side. And so, you know, I have some opinions where racism is concerned and, you know, the whole establishing of this state and everything. And I've also lived, I've had the benefit of living up north as well. And I, you know, when I lived up north, we had a black dude that lived in our attic. And that was the first time I've ever been called, you know, I mean, the people in the neighborhood up north called me, the, you know, an in lover, you know, and I never got that down here when I lived in Texas. And, you know, it seemed to me like when I lived up north, I lived in New Jersey, you know, it was very segregated. And I think that, you know, the people, like, while the people wouldn't, you know, would speak more educatedly, like, I think that there was an ignorance as far as, like, what black people were like or, you know, what a black culture was. They've never really hung out with black people or been with black people. And, like, down here in the South, we felt comfortable with it, even comfortable enough to jest and say, you know, make jokes and crack racist jokes in front of people and, you know, to sort of, you know, as a sort of clumsy way to dialogue about the cultural differences. You didn't see that up north, but you saw it in the South, you know?
Well,
I've lived in both, and I'm a Southerner, and I do think that we, you know, we understand black people better because we live with them, and I think up north there's more segregation. They don't live with them.
Well, I think, and I don't know to what extent this is true or not. I'm just kind of reaching out there, but I think that to the extent what you say may be correct, it might have to do with the fact that the South had a lot of black people for several hundred years, whereas the number of black people in the North was relatively low until about the 1920s, when they started getting a lot of migration.
I mean, look at Huey P. Long. I mean, Huey P. Long said the N-word, night, day, you know, I mean, he said it all the time. But he did a lot for black people. Black people named their kids after him. I mean, look at Huey P. Newton. You know, he was named for Huey P. Long, who was a racist governor
in
Louisiana, in New Orleans. He was a populist, and he did a lot for black people, but he wasn't necessarily politically correct.
You know, there was a point where there was talk of him running.
They're very, 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 very politically correct, but they don't like black people.
Whoops. Okay, actually, we have to wrap this up because
I figured
time flew.
As much.
I am sorry. We have to. I got the music going. Do me a favor. Call me back next week. You there? Okay. Well, if you'd like, call me back next week. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the callers, Alon, Jim, Stacy. And, of course, I hope the people who got the tickets have a great time. And I'll speak to you next week. Remember, slower traffic, keep right. It's not just a good idea, it's the law. Take care.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston.
Kick off your weekend at Discovery Green at the Sounds Like Houston Thursday Concert Series presented by Green Mountain Energy. Join 90.1 KPFT FM every Thursday night, September 25th through October 23rd for free, family-friendly outdoor concerts at Discovery Green. Dance, sing, and chill on the hill to tunes from renowned and dynamic performers. This upcoming Thursday, September 25th, join us for a special performance by headliner Paul Thorne, who captivates audiences with a fine balance of knockout rock and roll, whimsical storytelling, and hard charging groove. Craig Kinsey kicks off the show with a set of tunes from his latest release, American Roots and Machines. Concerts begin at 6:30. Blankets, pets, picnics, and lawn chairs are welcome. Beer, wine, grilled corn, and other tasty bites are available for purchase at the Lake House. Most street parking is free starting at 6 p.m. This is a St. Arnold Brewing Company recycling night. Recycle your 6, 12, and 24 pack carriers during the concert and double your reward points. For more details and a full lineup, visit Discovery Green.